Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Lindsay Clancy, that's the case we are talking about today, because she did everything the system tells a struggling mother to do when they're feeling that something is off, very off. She didn't just sit there and go, this is me, deal with it. She went to ERs. She called crisis lines. She checked herself into hospitals who checked her out, took every pill they handed her, and the system kept handing her more and then handed her back. And now she's on trial for taking the lives of her three children after going through that horrific ordeal. We welcome your thoughts in the comment section. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, is with us, along with Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. 13 medications in 4 months. That's the big thing that stands out to me on this whole damn case and just kind of ends it all. Benzos, antidepressants, antipsychotic, a sedative. Her husband told the doctors she was turning into a zombie. At 13 drugs, whether you just had a baby or not, and you're getting on all these different medications this frequently, and one doctor's not talking to the next and communicating what one is on, what may interact this way with that one. Is anyone still actually treating the patient, or are they just kind of handing out TikToks at the behest of Big Pharma? I mean, what exactly is going on here when you have a situation exactly like Lindsay Clancy's?
Yeah, this is a systemic failure, and I hesitate to lay blame, although I might. I would love in this case to look over all the treatment notes and all the rationales, because when they change a medication, they're supposed to have a rationale for why. Did they in this case? And if they didn't, then that's a flag of a bad doctor. But, you know, I wonder how much time were they spending? Were these 15-minute appointments? I mean, one of the problems here with the system is insurance doesn't cover hour-long visits for psychiatry. It's supposed to be a quick med check, you know, so they start a med. Were they following up? You know, when you start a med with somebody who's this ill, you want to follow up in a few days, at most a week. You don't want to say, I'll see you next month. And there's no excuse for lacking the coordination of care. Providers need to talk to anyone else who's treating that person, because we really, at this point, it sounds horrible. It's confusing. It obviously, this was not effective treatment.
Yeah.
And it really needs to be, you know, the deconstruction of this whole thing. And who was not paying close attention.
And it sounds pretty par for the course in how we handle prescribing most of these medications in our country. I mean, psychiatrists should be the ones that are prescribing it, but you have so many general cares that just do, because somebody comes in and says, I'm feeling down. Well, let's see what we got in the sample cabinet over here today for you. 17-minute appointments. I mean, if anyone, our audience out there who's takes any of these things, it may have been in those situations where it's like, wow, that was a really quick exam to give me drugs that can dramatically alter my thinking. That's always been disturbing to me, but it is unfortunately the norm, which I'm gonna guess you would agree needs to change. Each one of those short psychiatric appointments ended with a new prescription. And it wasn't all psychiatrists that were handing out the Tic Tacs. Nobody stopped to ask whether the first 12 had done anything except make her worse. Is that a failure of the doctor? Is that what basically 17-minute appointments are designed to produce?
Yeah, I have known a handful of wonderful psychiatrists. So sure, there are some that really follow up closely. They coordinate care. If the person has a psychotherapist who they're doing talk therapy with, they talk with that person. They really try to clarify diagnosis. So I don't want to say it's all of them.
No, not at all.
But in a lot of cases, there's a tremendous pressure for them to see a lot of people because of the doctor shortage. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like people are being churned and you know, pushed through the system, and there's not the time for the follow-up care. And, you know, is the doctor working in a hospital setting or a group which is demanding that they practice that way? I don't think most doctors are well-meaning, but there's sure this pressure in the system to churn people through.
Yeah, and I want to get to the system here, because while we're discussing this, I'm like, all right, so we're talking about mental health and we're talking about psychiatrists and we're going glass half full, great psychiatrists out there. But if they're limited because of the amount of time they can spend there, what's causing it? And so I did look up in general how our insurance system is covering psychiatry. So
not
yeah
well.
No, it's not. So here's the bottom line. So the co-pays, you generally pay the specialist. So they regard psychiatrists not as primary care, they regard them as specialists. So you need a specialist referral. They have co-pays are higher, deductibles and co-insurance are higher. Most of them are out of network, and so your insurance is not going to cover it all anyway. Prior authorization is required. The visits are limited in the numbers you get. And network adequacy, medication management, and therapy is reduced. And so all these hindrances to want to get good mental health is a big problem in this entire thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you nailed it. Very, very true. And the other thing that I think is a good standard of care is the psychiatrist, particularly someone with postpartum psychosis with an infant, they need to be talking to family members as well. And of course, you have to have a release to do that. But whenever I have somebody that I think is very unstable, or I'm worried about, you know, something bad could happen here, I get a release to talk to family members, because they are spending, hopefully, a lot of time with that person, and they may be noticing odd behaviors that person is not disclosing. Yeah. And so that's something that I think is rarely done. But again, the time, you know, it's a collateral visit. Sometimes you can just have a phone call with the mother or the father or the husband and say, hey, you know, I'm a little concerned about this and that. What are you noticing at home? It's another important thing.
I want to talk about her husband recognizing the problems here, because he was on her side helping her get to appointments, you know, monitoring this, telling doctors this isn't working, that. I mean, he was very involved. And there's some people who've kind of gone down a road of like, well, he shouldn't have gone on for takeout. Okay, well, I'm sure he looks back on that and goes, bad choice.
Same thing.
But it's not like he wasn't giving a shit. Yeah. He was there. He still is there for her. An interesting element to this case is that allegedly in a previous pregnancy, she had postpartum depression, not postpartum psychosis, at least wasn't diagnosed as postpartum psychosis. So there is a bit of a history here. And if you've gone through that once, if you're the partner of the person who's gone through it, or even if you're the person, if you're her, and you're feeling somewhat similar in certain ways, but different nonetheless, to the partner, that may be presenting as, okay, she's going through postpartum depression again. Okay, sure, we got this. We did it before. It's difficult. It's shitty. I feel horrible for her, but we got this.
Yeah.
It's as the partner of someone, it would be very easy, in my summation, to not be able to distinguish the two. Number one, he's not a medical provider. Yeah. He's the husband. All of these doctors couldn't quite seem to figure it out. And I wouldn't expect him to either. But how easy is that for someone in a situation like this with multiple children who've had difficulty in the past with postpartum depression to just think, oh, it's that again?
Yeah, very, very easy. Very easy. And I think families do that all the time. They don't have the training to recognize it. And I'm guessing from everything we've heard that he had no idea that she would ever hurt the children. That just is so unfathomable, you know, that it just didn't cross his mind that was a possibility.
Siobhan, another thing that it popped up in a little bit in this case earlier, and then the example you gave, where a lot of times it sounds like, again, we just have a limited data set here, that there's a lot of self-awareness that this person knows that they're having a problem, they're having an issue. They actually reach out to people. Is it more or less common for a level of self-awareness to have someone like Lindsay know that they're having an issue and go seek help on their own, or do they try to hide it more often than not?
I think that's an excellent point because, you know, with her medical background and knowledge, she probably had more insight than most psychotic people do. And sometimes, you know, they try to minimize it. They try to hide it. They find it confusing, shameful, hard to figure out. And so they just try to keep plugging away. And as the symptoms intensify, other people may or may not notice it. And somebody may reach out to get help for them, even when they don't understand what it is, you know, but that's the important
thing.
And
it's easy to dismiss it. We kind of talked about it a little bit already too, just because when you're a healthy person in general, you're surrounded by good, healthy relationships, people figure you got it. And then also, you know, my daughter being a nurse, as I brought up multiple times, believe it or not, they don't have the best health coverage. You know, they're in the same marketplace competing with everyone else. And a lot of times they don't have the best health coverage. And so you have people that are surrounding you saying, we got this, we're loving, good, caring family, and we're only allowed 15-minute visits, and we're out of copays, and you know, so it makes it easy to rationalize away. So I'm not saying he did, it's just the system, like we keep saying, was not structured to take care of people in distress.
Not at all. I'd like you to explain, Siobhan, to people who have the question here, where they cite, which the prosecution is saying, she was coherent the day that this all went down. Pediatrician visit, allegedly played in the snow, ordered takeout. See, she's with it. Explain to people who don't quite understand how someone can be in a full, could have a full psychotic break and still be presenting completely normal to people around them on that very same day.
Great question. And the interesting thing is, if they knew what was going on internally for her, they would have got it. But she was not necessarily disclosing that to them, not disclosing much about it. And that's common for people with psychosis to present fairly normally. They can get up in the morning, they can shower, they can make food. You know, they may seem that they're doing their normal routine, but it's what's going on in their head that's different. And the family may be picking up on small things that are different, but as you say, just kind of minimizing it. Oh, she's depressed again or whatever. But it's very possible for people to have some degree of strategic planning to know what they're doing. I mean, so many cases come to mind, but the guy who shot Gabby Giffords, I mean, he was going to college. You know, people thought he was weird. He was doing weird things, but he was functional in many ways and yet completely delusional about, you know, that she was doing things to him or whatever. But he wasn't telling people about all the delusions. And so he navigated well. He was even stopped on the way to because he did kill people. He was stopped on the way to the murders by a police officer. The cop interviewed him. He said he was very polite. He shook hands with him and had no idea that there were guns in the trunk, you know. So
to that, Siobhan, because again, I think it's important for people to really understand what this looks like to the layperson kind of crossing their path in these things. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm kind of taking a wild-ass guess at this. As you've described psychosis, is it basically like this, as it presents, is like this person is completely living their normal reactions, they're living their normal life. The psychosis part is like added in. In other words, they don't change who they are, they don't change all the behaviors. They just have this added thing because the psychotic event is being added to them, which is unrecognizable potentially to others because they're presenting in normal because it is normal to them. They just have this added thing that just popped in their head, like voices, images, whatever it is. Is that correct?
It can be. And the other thing that I think is poorly understood is that psychotic symptoms can be on a continuum. And you can have people who are a little bit psychotic. I've got, disclose, I don't think she watches this show, a cousin who...
We'll
call her a cousin, yeah. She believes that dead people talk to her.
Oh.
And yes.
Seems rational.
And,
they have whole TV channels around that.
Yeah, and she does channel. She does channeling.
Okay.
And, you know, tries to talk about being a medium. But it's caused a lot. It caused her marriage to end. It's caused lots of problems for her in her life. And if you spend time talking to her, she's very mentally ill. I mean, I picked it up right away.
Yeah.
She's in college right now. She's doing well. She's doing internships out in the community. She's just not talking about the dead people talking to her. Now, that's on one end of the continuum, somebody that can function pretty well. On the other end, and all gradations in between, but on the other end, I have gone out with Mobile Crisis to evaluate people who were literally so psychotic. One guy was sitting on the couch and could not get up to find the kitchen to feed himself. His thinking was so disorganized. The voices were going constantly. Anybody would look at him and go, psychotic. But it's, you know, it's different in different people.
So I'm also curious because I've seen, you know, the pseudoscience shows that cover this kind of thing. And I'm curious. So when people are having one of those moments where, so let's use, for example, your person we're calling a cousin,
yeah.
She's at the moment, she is thinking she's channeling someone who's passed and deceased, which is a psychotic moment. Is something different going on in the brain at that time that is recordable, that's actually recognizable?
That would be fascinating to know. And my guess is very likely so, but I don't think we have enough, you know, sophisticated neuroscience monitoring and screening to be able to know that.
They've done it on Long Island Medium. I saw that one episode once where they actually wired her brain up to see what was going on during her events. And that, I was curious whether that was a one-off or whether there's actually been any studies on psychotic
events.
Yeah.
I do think it has been to a certain degree. I do think so. But yeah, it's at times when they have studied at times when the voices are happening, the auditory parts of the brain are actually lighting up. They are hearing that. And yes, with the more subtle kinds of delusional things where, yeah, I'm hearing, you know, my dead grandma talking to me or whatever. Would that, or, you know, and some of hers is just delusional. She's not always hearing the voices, but she's having the thoughts and believing that the dead people are communicating.
See, Tony, little did you know you're getting content for ghost stories as well.
That's true.
I was thinking about that.
I mean, yeah, I hear you. I mean, yeah. And that's a whole other conversation over there.
It's a deep conversation.
Oh my God.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, with true crime and the ghost stories used to be spooky when I do those. Now it's just like, oh, this is such a nice relief from
worlds colliding,
release from the real monsters of the world, the humans. Let's talk about the five providers across multiple facilities. There's a civil lawsuit that the family filed that she and her husband filed against them. None of them pulled a complete history or talked to each other. I think the process or the thought process for most Americans is that if I'm getting a prescription from my doctor, they have a magical system that communicates with the previous doctors and they know what I'm on, or I've told them what I'm on, and they're do their due diligence and make sure that because they're the last line of defense here, other than the patient themselves, of making sure I'm not taking something that's going to be dangerous for me. None of that occurred. Why is that? Is this system not designed for this, not required to do these sort of things? It's just kind of on an honor basis. What failed here so catastrophically, or is it working as designed?
No. Our ethical standard of care, and in order to get a license, a clinical license, it is mandatory that you understand if there are other providers treating the person, including a family practitioner, you are supposed to be communicating with the other providers. If they have a talk therapist, the psychiatrist is supposed to coordinate care with that person to find out what they're seeing. Certainly providers providing different meds are mm-hmm. supposed to be communicating with each other. In most cases, that's discouraged. It's like, get one good provider and stick with that person. You know, don't hop around. But I find it a matter of most likely a fatigue on the part of the providers, the overwhelm, mm-hmm. the fact that they're just not following standard of care because they don't have right. the time and energy to do it, which
is problematic. Well, are there any consequences for not, other than getting sued?
Getting sued, and certainly reports to licensing boards can be sure. made, and you can get dinged that way. Now, is the licensing board going to take action in every case? You know, certainly yeah. if there's a bad outcome like this, I would mm-hmm. think that they would at least be reprimanded.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I just looked up standard of care, HIPAA, liability risk, and professional guidelines all require them to communicate like that.
Yes. Absolutely.
It's one of these cases where hopefully this is a cautionary tale for some offices
yes.
and that this, you know, indirectly we'll never necessarily know about it, but enough will go, shit.
We gotta, definitely.
Let's really watch this.
Definitely.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on that portion of our conversation as we continue talking about the Lindsay Clancy case.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Despiértate, que el $4 breakfast meal deal ha llegado a McDonald's. Incluye un sausage McMuffin o sausage biscuit, hash brown y un café caliente. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Moto Casino is pure American energy. Born in the USA and with the same 1776 spirit that built this country. Moto, America's social casino, is celebrating that freedom with a 1 million sweeps coin prize giveaway. One lucky American is going to win 1 million sweeps coins. So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home 1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino,